to return at Spurlock. Michael Spurlock at the 10. He's to the 20. He's to the 25. Spurlock 30 to the 40-yard line. We could see history. 50, 40 to the 30-yard line. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. There you go.
And that.
Shotgun set. Three receivers left. Here's the snap, and the blitzer is picked up. Brady underneath. Caught ball. Evans. He has the record at the 11-yard line. Mike Evans becomes the first NFL player in league history to record 1,000 yards or more in his first seven seasons and won a throw by Brady. Congratulations, Mike Evans.
Who can forget?
Gannon looking, Gannon throws up the middle. That's intercepted at the 30. Derrick Brooks, 30. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Derrick Brooks, the most valuable player in the National Football League. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl. Here's the snap. Mahomes running to his right. Look out. He may run. Mahomes directly. Oh, throw the end down. Battle. Intercepted. Picked off at the end zone. Bucks are going to beat the Chiefs. We're the champions of the world, and we still have a minute 33 to go. Devin White, what a great second season. That's it for KC. Bucks are the Super Bowl champs. They can't stop the clock.
We call them the Salty Dogs.
Welcome into the latest episode of the Salty Dogs podcast, wherein we talk mostly about Buccaneers football, but also occasionally get off track a little bit, but hey, that's part of the fun of it, right?
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
I'm Scott Smith.
I'm Jeff Ryan.
And we are the Salty Dogs.
We are, yes.
And we're feeling pretty good. We're going to
Feeling really salty. In fact, I was walking downstairs and someone said, you definitely must be getting ready to do the Salty Dogs. I said, yep, I'm warming up in the hallway right now.
Well, we're also going to have a good time. Let's let the listeners know what they're in store for today. We're going to talk about...
Let me know what we're in store for.
Yeah, you tend to have to wing it anyway.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that great win in New Orleans and the fact that the Bucs are 2-0.
Yay.
We're going to talk about something they haven't done ever before that we have done already this season. You got a quizzical look on your face, so I'm going to catch you by surprise, I guess.
All right.
We're going to have a nice interview with Brandon Walton.
We are.
Who played a surprisingly important role in that win in New Orleans.
How do you do that, right? Has four snaps previously, I think
they were
was.
All on special teams.
Yeah, and then he goes in.
He had never played a snap on offense.
Can't wait.
And all of a sudden, he's protecting Tom Brady's blindside.
Wow.
And he did a good job. So we are going to have a good time talking to him.
Sure.
And then in our third segment.
He's a local. He's a Tampa guy.
I know. Seminole, right?
Yep, Seminole Heights kid.
I think it's high school. Pinellas.
Yeah, Pinellas County. Well, that's part of Tampa Bay.
Yeah, okay. But it's not Tampa. And that's what you said.
Oh, I revert back. Tampa Bay.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay area.
Yes.
As it is known. Not the actual water.
No.
He's not from there. And so we'll have a good time with that one. And in the last segment, we're going to answer fans' questions. And Jeff, I think last week you said our numbers are up.
Yeah.
Well, I think our engagement is too.
Good.
We got more people listening and more people
Do you know why?
SEO?
No, because you're giving them the website.
Oh, that's what I was about to do, but you cut me off.
Well, I asked you if you knew why we are having more interaction.
You can send us fan questions. Or you can send us questions. They don't have to be about fans. And we will answer them.
Do you like a Hunter fan or do you like – never mind. Yeah. Continue.
I am a big fan of fans, as it turns out. We have – you know, on the road.
I do.
I don't currently have like a small fan to pack in my suitcase. And I like having a fan on when I'm sleeping, so I downloaded an app on my phone that sounds like a fan.
Really?
Yeah, so at least I get the sound. Anyway, you can send us questions, and we will answer them almost certainly. We try to answer all of them if we can, or at least most of them, and send it to saltydogs@buccaneers.nfl.com.
Easy.
Easy.
Don't forget the .nfl.
That's the part that's a little strange.
That's the one that gets everybody.
I think people are getting it right, though, because we have a lot of questions again this week, Jeff. So
really?
We got a lot to do, so I guess we should dive into it. But anyway, send us questions. And, you know, you can always, if that's the part you're most interested in, you can always just fast forward to that part and then come back and pick up whatever.
And you also can make comments, too. It's not just questions.
Observations.
That's
true.
Disputes.
In fact, I got a very nice one that is not a question, but it was very enjoyable.
Okay.
We'll get to later. So, first of all, I said the Buccaneers have done something they've never done before. Do you have a guess as to what that might be?
Won two road games to start a season out?
Correct.
In a row?
Correct. Now, that doesn't mean they won their first two road games, because we've done that before.
Sure. But no, season opener.
2-0 start with both wins on the road.
Yeah.
First time the Bucs have ever done that.
Crazy, isn't it?
And it happens around the league. It's happened 42 times since the merger, which is like 52 years.
Okay.
So a 2-0 start with two road wins. So it's not that common. And you got to feel like you're in a good spot when you start the season with two road wins in your bank.
Considering that you went up against two playoff teams last year.
And well, the Saints weren't, but
well,
the playoff team.
They played pretty well. They were close. And, yeah, I should take that back. The Saints beat us like a drum for the last
We're halfway through what was considered this gauntlet of the first month.
Yeah.
With a 2-0, that's great because worst case scenario, and I don't think this is what's going to happen.
No.
But worst case scenario, you get out of that with 2-2 and the schedule then eases up quite a bit because we have we have the Packers and then the Chiefs coming to town. But so we're in, you know, it's a good spot. It's a good spot to be in. In fact, the Buccaneers have won 6 straight road games dating back to last year.
Which is.
You knew that one too?
Yeah. Which is good because we're a road team now. I'm going with that.
Not for the next 3 weeks, though.
No, it's going to be strange. You know what? Here we are in third week of the NFL season. We were on the road for two preseason games.
Yeah, so
we spent 5 days in Nashville. So I just feel like we've been on the road a lot. So it's going to be really kind of unusual to go to Raymond James Stadium and go, oh yeah, this is where we play.
Yeah, now I have to. Now I can bug my wife a lot more. I'll be home a lot more often. So,
I'm sure Giselle is really excited
about
that.
Should we start? And by that he means my wife, not Giselle.
Well,
Tom Brady's wife.
There's a lot of rumors going on.
I've not met Tom Brady's wife.
Go ahead.
So the Bucs are 2-0. There's no reason to complain, right? Especially because knocking off the Saints.
There's many reasons to complain. That's what fandom does.
Well, yeah. But
for us, no. I don't think there's anything to complain about.
So I see a headline on the TV yesterday.
Uh-oh.
And it's on one of these sports shows, and the little crawl at the bottom says, concerns over Tom Brady's slow start? I'm telling you what you should be concerned about Tom Brady's slow start is if and only if you're talking about fantasy football.
Oh, yeah. Was it a fantasy football show?
It was not.
Oh.
If you're starting Tom Brady in fantasy football, then, yeah, the first 2 weeks you didn't do well. And there's reason to be concerned that the Buccaneers won't be throwing for 306 yards per game like they did last year and 43 touchdown passes. I mean, he's probably not going to reach that again based on having 2 in the first 2 games.
Right.
But in real life.
Which I hope
which is
we're
more important.
Yeah.
The reasons for this statistical downturn for Tom Brady to start the season are pretty clear and obvious.
I would think so, considering that we're having some struggles in the receiver department.
We had Chris Godwin out, Julio Jones out, Mike Evans, which we'll be talking about in a bit, didn't play the fourth quarter.
Nope.
And Russell Gage and Breshad Perriman played despite being questionable coming into the game and probably not at 100%.
Correct.
That's what you're dealing with. Go ahead.
There were opportunities to complete passes. It just didn't happen.
And there was a lot of near misses between Tom Brady and Scotty Miller,
who
not appear to have the same connection they had in 2020.
No, and I sure wish they'd get it back because I really like Scotty
Miller. I do too, and I think he can give us some big plays, but I think the type of routes that we're just missing on are ones that would be better for Chris Godwin.
Yes.
And they would be better for Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. And they would be better for Mike Evans.
It makes
bigger targets when you're
total sense.
When you're trying to run like those deep posts or those deep crossers, there's usually a pretty tight window.
Yeah.
And having that big catch radius and physical nature of play that all of those other guys I just mentioned have makes it more likely they're going to pull that ball in.
Right.
Now, there's nobody else that's going to run down the sideline as fast as Scotty, and he's provided us some big plays doing that. But we need more of the Godwin, Jones, Evans type of snaps. Also,
and in fairness, too, the tight end struggled.
The tight ends are not – nobody we have in our tight end group is going to replace what Rob Gronkowski does.
No.
So that's not there. The offensive line is largely reworked and was missing Donovan Smith.
Totally reworked.
Tristan Wirfs is still there.
Oh, yeah.
Was missing Donovan Smith and – to my way of thinking, they've done a pretty darn good job the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
No, the rushing game wasn't as effective, but Saints are very good against the run all the time.
And that's the other thing, is you have to give credit to the opposing team. You have to realize that Dallas has a pretty good front four, and the Saints are no slouch in that department either.
Yeah.
So you're up against some pretty good teams, too.
So you have a lot of reasons why this offense is not really clicking in terms of big passing numbers like we expected to based on the last 2 years. But presumably, we are going to become healthier in the receiving core. Mike Evans has to probably sit out this next game unless he successfully appeals the suspension.
Which is happening as we're talking about this.
These types of suspensions are very rarely overturned.
Yeah.
It maybe would have been nice if it could have, at least the process could have taken a little while and he could play in this game, but then he would miss the Kansas City game.
Right.
So which one do you want for there?
Well, maybe, you know, like sometimes a guy gets suspended for three games and they cut it down to one game.
But if
maybe
you start at one.
Maybe they'll cut it down to half a game. You can't start the game, but you can finish the game.
It sounds like something a college coach would do.
I think they should. Fair is fair.
You can't play the first half.
You can't play the first half.
That's funny.
Or you only get to play two quarters. You pick the
quarters. You choose. Yes. or 35 plays.
There you go.
Somebody would have to be keeping track of that one, though.
Sure.
That's a clever idea, Jeff.
I like that. You're welcome. You're welcome.
I'm going to write that down. I don't have a pen.
That's all right. You have almost like a photographic memory, so you're pretty good.
I don't know if that's
true. Well, you're pretty good remembering stuff.
So,
especially if I err on something. You're very good
at remembering wrong.
Yes.
So there's reason to believe that the passing game will be better, I think. And I'm not worried. I mean, have you seen throws from Tom Brady that make you think he's lost it like Peyton Manning did in his last year?
No, there weren't ducks. There weren't things just like it was like, oh, if the ball would have got there, they could have caught it. No, the ball was there.
There were some good plays.
There were some good plays. And I'm going to jump ahead here, but you want to know if Tom Brady's arm still works? The Perryman throw.
That was great.
That was one of the most beautiful passes I have seen ever.
Wow.
The way it just dropped. I mean, it was like, who does that? He's like he was like it was a drone dropping the ball in his hands. It was that perfect.
It reminds me of the back corner Scotty Miller touchdown in Las Vegas in 2020. Didn't Dave Moore have a good term for that when it's in like that yard?
Yeah, it's some kind of box or something. I have to ask him again. Yeah, you're right. There is a term for that.
It was beautiful, and I'm not concerned about Tom Brady's arms, his motivation, his health, anything.
No.
Okay, but in addition to me believing that our passing game is going to get better, I don't necessarily think it's going to be as good as it was last year, and I don't necessarily think it's going to be as heavily weighted.
Yeah.
Last year, we ranked last in the league in run percentage ratio.
Right.
Last. You know what we are this year?
What?
Seventh.
Oh, wow.
And first in run percentage. That means the percentage of plays you run on first and 10. First in the league. It worked really well in Dallas. The rushing numbers were not great in New Orleans. And it was frustrating on some very short third and fourth downs.
Uh-huh.
We ran every time and it didn't work. And Todd Bowles said on Monday, we have to find a way to get 1 yard if we're going to try. He said that. We have to find a way to reliably get 1 yard if we're going to be doing this going forward on fourth down.
Correct. And?
So that will develop, but it was pretty clear through the first 2 weeks. Now, remember, Todd Bowles has said on multiple occasions, after he took over as head coach and everybody wanted to know how the offense would change, that he wants to do whatever it takes to win. So if that means Tom Brady throwing 55 times, fine.
Right.
If that means us running 35 times, fine. The Buccaneers went into that game against the Saints, and it's pretty obvious that they felt the winning formula involved running the ball a lot, particularly on first down. It was sometimes you watch a game or a couple games and you think, man, we always run on first down. We were talking about some people complaining about that last week.
Yep.
What you see, your eyes did not fool you on Sunday in the Superdome, Jeff.
We were doing it.
23 first downs. We ran the ball on 18 of them. Or 17. 17 of them.
And what did we average?
If you take that counts two kneel downs.
Two yards.
So if it's 15 of 21.
What did we average first downs? 2 yards?
It wasn't good. We did have a 6-yard run, a 13-yard run, a 7-yard run, two 5-yard runs, and another 5. There were some good ones, but there were also a lot that weren't great.
Sure.
But that was clearly the plan. We ran on first down on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Our first 6 first downs we ran. And then the first pass we threw on a first down was to Leonard Fournette. And we even ran the next time on 1st and 15 when we got a false start to start the drive. So that was clearly the plan. It was a bit frustrating to watch for three quarters, but who won the game?
Well, I get everyone's all cranked up about the offense and blah, blah, blah. But I look at it this way. The team won, not playing their best ball.
Well, that's true, too.
And there's so many times where we have been in Buccaneer games where in order for the team to win, they had to play lights out the whole game to win the game. This is a good football team that wants to bring its best game, but it didn't have its best game, but found a way to win.
Yeah.
And to me, that is worth everything because they can win without being their best. Now, it's not that they're not trying to be their best, but you're having all these injuries. You're shifting people around. You're having drop balls. You're having things not go right. But I don't think it was the game plan that went wrong. It was the execution. And I always remember that from Tony Dungy. The plays will work. You just have to execute them. So
yeah, and then sometimes, as you said earlier, you just got to give the other team credit for making a good play. But
defensively, Scott,
that's
two
that's,
games, 13 points, yeah. And we were on the airplane, and I made a comment, yeah, that last touchdown, maybe I shouldn't say it was garbage. And you go, no, it was. It was a garbage touchdown, meaning they were playing a prevent defense.
Yeah, a little bit.
It softened up a little bit.
They were trying to make them use time.
Yeah. But the
which you do with a 3-score lead.
Right. But you go against the top-rated, high-scoring team last year in the Dallas Cowboys, holding them to 3 points, and then then New Orleans Saints, who were playing pretty well or had a great fourth quarter against Atlanta Falcons the week previously. So you figure, well, they can score points. And I'm pleased as punch.
If you told me before the season started that the Bucs defense wouldn't allow a touchdown until 117 game minutes into the season, I'd be perfectly fine. I'll take that, and you tell me, did we win those games?
No. Yeah.
The Bucs allowed a field goal on the first drive in both games and some third down conversions on both of those drives, which at the beginning of the game, you tend to get a little frustrated. Are we ever going to stop them?
Yeah.
Both cases from then on out, practically just shut them down, and we're very, very good on third downs.
Well, it was like 6 quarters before we actually scored, period. It was because the last game that we played against the Saints was 4 quarters.
Oh, you
it
mean
was
against
nine,
the Saints.
Yeah, it was 9-0, and then you're like going, geez, are they ever going to score? Yeah. At a halftime, I was like, wow. You know, we had a chance for a field goal, but we didn't take the field goal. We went for it, 4th and 1, and got stopped. Mm-hmm. You know, so there were opportunities, but I did like.
Well, and the fumbled snap on the first drive. The first two drives were good. They just ended badly.
Correct.
But it may just be that even though I think there's going to be some, I think there's too much talent on offense, and the offensive line seems to be handling all the transitions decently enough, that we are still going to have some of those really explosive afternoons that we've grown accustomed to. But maybe this team, on a number of weeks, as it certainly was the case this week, wins with defense and grinding it out on offense. Mm-hmm. If you have to do it that way, it's good that you're capable of doing it that way.
Until you get healthy.
So I think
if everybody was healthy and the team is playing that way, I would be concerned then. But
I wouldn't, as long as it works.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is that I think it's way too early in the year to be panicking. Even, you know, if you were 0-2, you have concerns, but it's not a panic yet. Well, maybe the Titans have got a panic going on. But, you know, I'm just saying that, it's just so early. But, yeah, look at the Raiders. They blew up in overtime, or the fourth quarter and then overtime. So, you know.
It's like what Byron Leftwich said a week or two ago, maybe last week. He's people always say, do you want the Bucs to have a more balanced offense? Mm-hmm. By which they generally mean a more close to 50-50 split between running and passing. He says balance isn't what he's concerned with. He's concerned with being multiple. Mm-hmm. And what he means by that is the Buccaneers offense has multiple ways that it can help the team win the game. If they have to do what they did this week, well, it's good that they were able to do it. If the Buccaneers had to do a game plan like they did offensively in New Orleans, it's good that they were able to get out of it with a win, right?
Mm-hmm.
There will be other ways that this Bucs, if it works according to Byron's plan, there will be other ways in which this team wins games. Now, let's talk about how that all went down, though.
Okay.
Because it was 3-3.
Yeah.
Buccaneers didn't.
It's a real nail biter.
Didn't get on the board until the third quarter, but it still tied the game.
And was that stadium loud?
It always is. We got to get to that too. Yeah. Do you want to just digress there right now?
Well, no. I'm just saying is that you're 3-3, and they have home field advantage going on.
Yeah, because it was so loud.
It was so loud. Yes.
I want to talk about that stadium a little bit too.
We can.
So it's 3-3. The Buccaneers have had the ball kind of deep in their own territory. Mm-hmm. Still not really in sync on offense. And Tom Brady tries to hit Scotty Miller down the right sideline. It's incomplete, and there's decent amount of contact between Scotty and Marshawn Lattimore.
Decent amount. You're being polite.
Well,
If that was on a street, that would be called a mugging, and there would have been an arrest. Okay.
And obviously, if we were Saints fans, we'd probably be saying it was perfect form. Yeah. He was doing the whole
Saint fans,
Raheem Morris.
What are the Saint fans know?
He was doing the whole Raheem Morris look and lean thing.
Uh-huh,
you're on the sideline, you're kind of leaning on him. I don't know. In my opinion, it looked a lot more grabby than that.
I did, too.
Before we can get a punt off, as both teams are trying to get their units in for the punt.
Something happened.
First of all, if you go back and look at some of the videos that have surfaced, Mike Evans initially walks right past Marshawn.
He does.
And there might have been something said back and forth, but nothing happened.
I will say that that's the problem with video, is depending on where you pick up on the tape, if you follow the tape after the play is over with, here's the problem that most fans have. You're looking at the TV tape. And they're not showing you a complete. I saw tape from NFL Films that's a little bit more. And you're right, he walks past and doesn't get involved.
But there was some jawing, obviously.
Yeah.
Listen, there were no angels in this.
Oh no.
There was just some jawing from our sideline. Yeah.
And this is a buildup. This was not just one play. This has been building up for years.
Yeah, more than one game.
Yeah.
And both sides tend to do a lot of talking.
Oh yeah.
We know the history between Marshawn and Mike.
Uh huh.
And you know, it sort of boiled over, and Marshawn and Tom Brady were arguing. I think Tom Brady has moments in games where he barks a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who said what to who first, but it was your quarterback and your nemesis arguing. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was a little shove from Leonard, and then pretty violent, pretty hard shove by Marshawn to Leonard, which is what Mike saw.
Yeah.
He comes flying out of nowhere back into the picture.
Yeah.
Knocks Marshawn down. Both of them get ejected.
Yeah. And well, there's also a big pile up
there. Oh, yeah, right. Right. That started a scrub.
And then the scrub, then everybody's down, and then they're trying to pull Mike up. And then Mike comes up, and what I was surprised is Mike took his helmet off. So there was an issue there. So
it might have come off without him wanting it to.
It could have been, but at least he had it. He had it in his hand.
So that ends, right? Yeah. Obviously, this is a big emotional undertaking. You can decide on which side who lost their cool.
Sure.
And after that...
Well, I would say both sides lost their cool.
I know, but I'm saying that was probably destined to be a turning point, regardless of which way it went.
Mm-hmm.
And had the Buccaneers not done what they did and lost, I think everybody would be blaming that moment for the Buccaneers once again losing their cool in New Orleans.
Yeah.
That's not what happened.
But no. No, they were able to retain.
Well, Jake Kamara goes back, and Jake Kamara had a nice day. But in this particular case, he kind of shanked a 26-yard punt. So after this emotional moment, game tied, New Orleans has the ball close to midfield. I'm betting their fans were feeling, okay, this is momentum right here.
No question.
Jamel Dean changed everything.
I know.
He changed everything.
Johnny on the spot.
Two plays into the drive. Jameis tries to go deep to Chris Olave, which he was trying to do all day. All day.
All right.
By the way, sidebar here, which you're not going to like because it's about fantasy, but if you have Chris Olave, that game, you could read that game one of two ways.
Yeah. Either you need to play him all the time or...
Well, Jameis, you could say Jameis clearly can't hit him on those deep balls, so I don't want to play him.
Hmm.
Or you could say, holy cow, Jameis is trying hard to get him a deep ball.
Yeah.
He must have thrown five deep balls to him in that game, right?
Yeah.
So if he's the one guy. They weren't sending Michael Thomas deep, and they weren't sending Jarvis Landry deep, and but neither of those guys is particularly fast. So Chris Olave is going to be your big play guy, and we all know Jameis likes to chuck it deep. So if you got him, I'd sit on him for a while, see if it works out.
Fantasy advice.
I have him on one of my teams. I haven't played him yet, but I still think he might be.
This is your theory right now.
I kind of hope it doesn't happen because I want the Saints to be bad.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the scenario.
All right.
It all looks good for New Orleans, and then Jameis tries to get Olave deep down the middle, and Jamel jumps up, intercepts the ball, lands in the end zone. Boom.
Boom. It was from there on.
And the ensuing drive, admittedly with the help of a few penalties.
But you know what? You make –
Those three unnecessary roughness calls on tackles, two against us, one against them, were baffling to me.
I am, and I'm trying to figure out. I noticed it in our game more, and then I noticed it last night watching the two Monday night games. Whenever there's a flag, the officials now talk to each other. It's never just...
Well, I think that's good.
I don't know.
They don't talk, whatever the initial call is going to be the call.
Yeah, but, I mean, if the guy throws the flag, I mean, why do you have to have three of them? You'd have the guy
different
that throws...
Different angles. Yeah. Hey, I think I saw this, but right. What did you guys see?
All right.
One guy... Because, for
it just
instance...
It takes a long time.
For instance, that first one...
And then sometimes it's not right, so...
I think the first time... Well, the first one of those was on Keanu Neal, yeah. I think. And it caused a fumble.
Mm-hmm.
And the play wasn't even over. The guy wasn't even down when I think it was called on Keno as the second guy there, as if he had come and jumped on the pile.
Yeah.
The play was over. But that wasn't even the case. The play was not over. The guy was not down, and he fumbled the ball.
Right.
I don't get that one at all. And then Levante David Lewin looked to me on replay like they thought he went helmet to helmet.
Yeah, I think he did touch it.
There's times I think he led with his shoulder. And sometimes you
try, helmet. Yeah.
And sometimes you try to do that, and you end up helmet to helmet. And as the league has made clear, your intentions don't matter. If it happens, it's a penalty.
Yeah. Right.
But in this one, it just looked like he hit him, and the helmet just kind of grazed on the sides a little bit. I don't know how that's a penalty. And then the one that they committed on Cam Brate didn't look like a particularly good penalty either. So maybe it evened out.
Well, the good
bit.
News is they were consistent in making you wonder if it was or not. So, and that's all you asked for, right? If you're going to call it questionable, right? You're saying there were some questionable calls against the Buccaneers. So
one.
Now one, but then there
oh,
was
two,
some,
two.
Yeah, then there's some questionable calls against the Saints that, you know, Saints fans are saying, I look at it as long as it's consistent, I'm good with it. It's when you go, that was a little sketchy. I'm calling it, and then it happens to the other team, and then they don't call it.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think they mostly did a good job on not throwing pass interference flags when they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
The fans there, I mean, we just talked about how, in our opinion, Marshawn probably did enough to get a pass interference penalty
right
on that play against Scotty. But the fans were very ecstatic they didn't. But freaking any time one of our defensive backs breathed on one of their receivers, they were losing their minds.
Right.
The replay would go up and it would look exactly the same. We're like, okay, that wasn't a penalty.
Yeah.
And the crowd's just booing their heads off.
Kind of like in the replays, they're showing their, you know, when it was instant replay and they're showing, you know, over and over and over. And it's like
that.
That's
speaking of which, that Chris Olave fumble at the end on the 51-yard catch, that was – an indication of how that rule has evolved in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Because based on the rule, as they used to call it, where if you were going down in the process of making the catch, if you didn't hold on to the ball upon hitting the ground, it's not a catch. I think they've sort of called that rule now as if there's some kind of move that they make.
Yeah, a football move.
So I guess they were saying he got a couple steps down.
He did.
And then fought.
He did.
I look at that and it looks to me like he extends to catch the ball, and because of that, he starts to stumble and he falls down because nobody touched him.
Yeah, but he didn't have movement of the ball. He got the ball, took two steps, and then went down. So
that's what you say happened.
Yes.
What I
saw. Well, that's what they say, too.
I know, and that's why I'm saying.
So we are right.
Well, you are right. I mean, I saw what would have been called an incompletion by the rules of a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But now, if they see him stumble a little bit, they don't necessarily say that that's him falling down in process of making the catch.
You know what else I go by? The reaction of the guy who fumbles or does anything. Because when a guy thinks he doesn't do it, he's very animated. But he kind of just got up.
He's a rookie.
Though. Yeah, he kind of got up and was like, I'm in trouble. I got to go back to the bench.
He doesn't learn to lead.
Usually your adrenaline tells you, you know, you don't have to be a rookie. I mean, if you don't think you did something, you're going to jump up and go, no, there's no way.
Well, in any case, I was a bit surprised and happily so.
Sure.
By that call.
Yeah.
So, Bucs drive after that Jamel interception, and they score what would be the go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah.
And it was very exciting. And around this time, I'm in the press box. And I decide, and they had been announcing all the rules about the freaking elevators.
Oh, yeah.
And I decided if I have any chance of getting down there, and because you can get stuck and then not make it down for the post-game press conference, which I needed to be in.
Right.
I left that freaking elevator with 7 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter.
And
a whole lot of stuff happened after that.
Yeah.
So I had to get to the locker room.
So were you in the elevator the whole time everything was happening?
No, but I did not see the second Jamel Dean interception. I was about to get
on.
That's
a good one.
and there's, you know, you can see through.
Yeah, yeah, the aisles.
The aisles, and the two workers there
were
going, what happened? And the one guy goes, they just intercepted it again. I'm like, oh, sweet. And then I get on the elevator, and I come to find out I went down. There was no TV. I wanted to sit there and continue working on my laptop while watching the game on a TV, but there was no TV in the press conference room.
So I had a brand new press conference room, by the way.
Slash equipment room. Who did double duty?
You know, when you say, hey, they put a new locker room in, you're thinking,
it can't be worse.
You're thinking, oh, this is awesome. And then you go, really? This is worse than the old one.
Yeah, but before the game, I walk in and go, where's the press conference room? Yeah. And one of the guys goes, it's the equipment room.
Yeah, it is. So, well, it's the equipment room in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then for the press conference, they move the equipment out.
Which I'm sure the equipment guys love, too.
Sure. Well, they love when we're in there connecting, but at least we can talk to each other more. So it's good.
It builds its team building, you say?
It is team building. Yes.
So I was sitting in a chair in the middle of the locker room.
Yep.
And the only people in there were Mike Evans and some workers watching the game, and it's just once again, like you said, you think, oh, new locker room, which is only because they took the place where the locker room was and changed it into like luxury suites
and lounges and stuff.
So,
which is kind of weird because
nothing ever gets better there.
Well, the craziness is the Tulane locker room is still there, and Tulane doesn't play there anymore. But that locker room they didn't do anything to it.
That must have been the one I kept walking by that said locker room one and locker room two.
Maybe, because I heard a discussion about that. But anyways, so you didn't see it, or you saw it on TV?
No, I saw a bunch of it, but I'm just complaining about the Superdome and didn't.
Oh.
The best thing about that win is we don't have to go back to that place, unless there's an unlikely playoff game. For at least a year.
Yeah, you were saying that on the plane, and you were very happy about that.
The New Orleans trip is over. Nothing against New Orleans, the city.
Right.
But the New Orleans trip is over. Don't have to worry about that place for a while.
Yeah.
I think it was louder than ever. You know, we're up there in the press box. We're at the highest level, so we're right at the same level as the speakers.
Right.
And for like 40 minutes during warm-ups, they were playing like techno and dance.
Yeah.
And it was so loud.
Yeah.
And it was just hard to concentrate.
But they were also playing some 90s rap that you were rapping.
I do like the choices.
Yeah, you were
rapping. You heard me rapping?
Rumor has it that you were in the press box rapping in your seat.
You know, and the
and not only were you rapping, but you knew every single word.
Yeah, well, I think it was Rex and Effect.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was.
I don't know, but they were. But I got a report on Scott Smith.
It must have been
rapping.
From Bree.
Scott Smith is – no, it wasn't Bree. Scott Smith is rapping, and I go, it was the 90s? Yeah. Oh, yeah, he does that.
Well, here's the thing. They always seem surprised when I know 90s music. Jeff,
you do
I graduated from college in 91.
You do know nothing happened until after they were born.
Yeah,
just remember that.
What generation are we talking about anymore? Is it Z?
I have no idea, but if it was 2000, before 2000 – Before the iPhone, nothing ever happened.
But the surprise, the thing that I don't understand the surprise from the young staffers when they overhear something like that, is why wouldn't a guy who was in his 20s when this music came out, why wouldn't he know that music?
Because they look at us like we're parents. We were never young.
I don't have any knowledge about the current rap scene whatsoever.
No.
None.
Nope.
You should be surprised if I'm singing... I don't even know. Kendrick Lamar?
I guess. Go for it.
My son listens to that stuff. I don't know what it is.
Well,
sure
a lot of times
good,
you would
know
because
it.
you have a college-age son, so you're more exposed to it in the car with him or something.
No, because when in the car, we'd play my music.
Okay.
And he'd have headphones on if he wanted to listen to his own
music.
That's
true. You would rule that.
The kids generally, nowadays, they have all their music on whatever device, and they listen to it in their headphones, so you don't hear what they're listening to. So that doesn't really work out.
That's true.
I'm not sure Alex has ever, like, closed the doors into his bedroom and, like, pumped the stereo.
Pumped it up.
Doesn't have a stereo. The kids, they even have stereos?
I don't think they do. No.
They just listen on their devices, right? Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's probably better.
It wasn't. They're not.
They have access to a lot more
music. They're not getting the, turn it down.
Yeah, but you're getting the no response from Alex. Doesn't matter anymore. He's off at college, so.
But you're still in the house going, Alex.
Yeah.
Alex.
The ghosts of. So after my digression about how much I can't stand that place.
Right.
Which I'm really.
It was sweet walking out, but I was
so great.
But I will say this, and true story, and I have witnesses to back it up. It was awesome. Just before the Mike Edwards pick, they come out of the huddle, and I have an all call button that talks to everybody who's on the broadcast team: Gene, Dave, TJ, Parabolic People, producers, everybody.
If you don't know this, Jeff Ryan is our, what's your exact title? Radio?
Director of Broadcast Operations.
But anyway, he runs the radio.
Right. So during the broadcast, I can talk to everybody if I want to or individually. But I hit the all call button. I said, be ready, pick six, here it comes.
Did you?
I did.
Was this a Jameis thing?
It was a Jameis thing. And my philosophy was he was getting comfortable in his throws.
Yeah.
And who was out there? But Mike Edwards. And he baited him because you saw he just stepped in front of the receiver and went. So it was like, I'm going to stand here and they're going to, Jameis is going to look over here and I'm just going to count 3, 2, launch. Got it. Done.
Gone.
So after it was over with, everyone wanted to take me to Vegas because I was making the calls.
Nice. Like, yeah. Good job.
But there is a lot. And listen, there's a lot of fondness for Jameis Winston.
Yeah, for sure.
He was a good guy when he was here.
Holds a ton of our team records.
Holds a ton of the team records. He went
was always good to us.
Yeah, he went to FSU, so Gene has a fondness for him. But if you're going to look at all of this.
You can't ignore history.
You can't ignore history. And there is a reason why he is not the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Right.
He had that 30-30 year.
Tom Brady was available.
And Tom Brady was available, and they made a move. Mm-hmm. And I always look at it. And so, you know, he goes to another team.
Good for him.
And good for him.
Kind of wish it wasn't in our division.
I totally agree. But I'm not going to root for him to do great.
Right.
You know, because we have friends on a lot of teams.
Right.
You know, well, John Lynch is a general manager of the 49ers. I wish them success. Him and Kyle, good luck. But not against us.
Exactly.
Period. So in that aspect, I think that it almost was like, to me, I thought we were just kind of, you know, the game plan was to go ahead and get him confidence and go for it. And unfortunately, that is what Saint fans are going to go through. You know, there's going to be some awesome throws and some not so awesome throws. And our defense capitalized on it.
So,
and Devin White is taking some heat for what he said, but I don't necessarily say it's a bad thing.
Which was?
When after the game, he said, we knew what he was going to do. We waited. And on one hand, I say, yeah, you're right. On the other hand is, hey, you got to play him again, so maybe you ought to keep that to yourself. But,
yeah, but I don't know. If you're doing anything that's going to make him more aggressive.
Well, there's that, too. And hey, oh, by the way, it's not like the Saints were ever very gracious winners.
That's true.
So, fair. Hey, listen.
We've seen victory some video evidence.
The spoils go to the victor. So, there you go.
So,
Did I throw you way off?
A little bit. Yeah, it was a good story. Okay, so
you're way off your sheet. I'm sorry.
I've got a lot, and we're not going to get to it.
You need
all.
To. You need to write.
We're not going to get to
You need
it
to
all.
Write. This is where Jeff goes off to the races. So go ahead. What do you got?
Okay, I gave you. You get credit.
You are befuddled.
You get credit for your prediction of the pick six. Two other people to give credit to for something like that. Not nearly as dramatically, but one of them is myself.
Mm-hmm.
After the bad punt and they have the ball at the 45, I predicted they're going to go deep here.
Yeah.
And they didn't on first down, but they did on second down. They're going to take their shot right now.
Yeah.
Then I'll give credit to Andrew Holman
of
our communications department, who was seated next to me.
Okay.
Or I was seated next to him. And he got very excited on that interception. And I could tell to him it felt like a momentum switch and like this is the thing we need. And I said – well, we still have to go 80 yards.
Right.
I mean, we haven't scored.
Right. But you stopped them, so I understand where Andrew's enthusiasm
He felt quicker than I did that this was the turning point.
Oh.
Right there. And it was, because it was an onslaught from then on.
He jumped on it.
So good job for him.
All right. So, well, he's a numbers guy like you, you know. He does game book, which is he does all the recaps and
everything.
Well, he does
all the notes and stuff.
Sure.
So anyway, so now that we've kind of recapped what happened, how about we go back to this Evans suspension?
Okay.
I think some people are upset that he was the only one suspended.
I kind of tend to agree with that.
It's close.
Well, I'll say this. The reason why I believe that is you're an instigator. You're creating a lot somewhere down the line. You're not innocent in this aspect either. So if you're gonna suspend somebody in an altercation like that, you just can't. I don't think you can just go one-sided. I think it sends a message to everybody that if you get into a fight, both of you are going out. I think that's the message that should happen. If there's a fight like that, both parties go out.
Okay. But you often see fights or some shoving matches.
I see shoving
that
matches,
that don't
yes.
result in necessarily ejections right. or suspensions.
Sure.
I think to summarize what the league believes and why Mike got the suspension is because there was a phrase, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but because I saw the letter that they sent to him, and it said you – or no, I saw their statement.
Sure.
And he was quoting the part of the rule book that had been violated. You know, Rule 12.
Yeah, dash 5. Yeah.
And the thing that they were emphasizing was that he launched himself at an opponent who had no reasonable – expectation that he was going to get
a
hit.
Defensive opponent. Yes,
Marshawn didn't know that Mike was coming.
Right.
Whereas when Marshawn shoved Lattimore, they were facing each other okay. and they were already sort of engaged.
Right.
So while it was enough to get him a suspension, it wasn't the specific thing that
when
when he shoved Leonard.
Leonard. Yeah.
That was the difference in their. Estimation.
But I did totally appreciate Mike Evans saying, you know. It's Tom Brady. What you expect
yeah,
me
know,
to
right?
do?
Yeah, I know, right?
And I totally.
I get the point. I don't think that's going to sway it.
Two things. One, it's Tom Brady. What you want me to do? I like that. Mm-hmm. And number two, well, three things. One is that. Two is putting his hand in front
of
the camera.
Four things.
No. One three. Is that. Two is putting his hand in front of the camera. Like the camera guy.
Oh,
really,
I heard about this.
No reason for the camera guy to be that close. Camera guy's got to get the shot, but the camera guy needs to be about 5 feet off. And he was able to put his hand there. So that's an issue. Or that's the second. The third is Mike stops, sees a young kid with a number 13 jersey on, takes his gloves off, gives the kid the gloves, and then goes to the locker.
Even in the moment. Huh?
In the moment, he remembers the fan. Yeah. So I totally appreciate
that. He does do that. He even gives away footballs. That
yeah,
are kind of
I just totally love
it. So that you said the cameraman should be 5 feet away. So he was getting the shot of Mike leaving from in front of him.
Yep.
Claimed because after that, obviously, he was upset and there was a discussion.
Sure.
He's claimed he was giving him 5 feet. And then I'm like, well, if that's the case, then how was Mike able to touch your camera
right.
without even hardly extending
correct.
His arm?
Correct.
So that was not true.
That was not true. And I saw some film on that.
And you saw some film, and he was pretty close.
He
right?
was very, very close.
So we understand you got to get the shot.
Sure.
But you don't have to be that close to that player for
right.
that long of a
right.
amount of time.
It doesn't give you that, you know, you can get the shot. But again, like you said, if you're 5 feet away, you're getting the same shot.
Right.
It's a
I mean,
big
you
lens.
Can zoom in.
Yeah. 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 So. But, hey, cameraman's trying to do his job.
I know.
Mike stiff-armed him.
So the thing that I think about when Mike gets the suspension is I start to worry about the 1,000-yard season.
There you go.
Because.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's one game that he's missing.
Sure. But I look at it this way. It's one game he's missing, so he'll get it in 16, and he got it in 16 before.
Well, that's one way to look at it. would be nice to have the 17th game, though. So, what we're talking about is that he's the first player in NFL history with 8 straight 1,000-yard yep. seasons to open his career.
Right.
But he's also close to the all-time record. And, you know, obviously,
sure.
we all want him to keep
no,
getting
yes.
it.
Yes.
So, in a 17-game season, I wrote this
down.
You would need 58.8 yards per game to get to 1,000.
Okay.
And through his first two games, including this one that he didn't get to finish,
uh-huh.
he was over that mark both times.
Right.
I think he had like 72
uh-huh.
in Dallas and 61 in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
So he's on pace. But now he's got to pick those 58.8 yards
right.
up somewhere else. So
sure.
he's going to have a few games
yeah.
where he does a little bit more than you would expect.
Yeah. Which you would hope. Yeah, I mean, you would hope he would be able to do that. And Perhaps with Atlanta and Carolina coming up in October, he can make up the difference right now.
Speaking of this whole situation, I had to go to the Saints website for something.
Uh-huh.
And
did it pain you to go to the website?
No. Okay. I'm just, they're fellow, they do the same thing.
Yep.
Some of these people do the same thing I do. So
we're sure.
contemporaries.
We are.
Peers. So
yeah.
I'm
we're all in.
But you go to their website and the main picture in, you know, at the top of the page is a picture of that, of Mike standing there and Marshawn on the
ground.
Yeah. So, of course, they're emphasizing
right,
this.
Right.
And then you go to this, I don't remember who the writer was, but it was
three observations from the game. That's something all websites do. Brianna Dix does five observations for us. Their take on the whole thing with the two ejections was, to me, a bit laughably homerific. Because they said it was a advantage for the Buccaneers because they lost a receiver, but we lost our top cover corner. So we just lost a receiver.
Yeah.
We lost our leading receiver. You lost your leading cornerback.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't say they lost their choir boy defensive back.
And then it goes on to say that had Marshawn been in the game, that they might not have been able to complete that pass to Breshad Perriman. But if Marshawn had been in the game, he would have been covering Mike Evans.
Yeah, he would not have been. Yeah.
He would have been covering Mike.
What they're saying is that Mike got ejected and had Marshawn not been ejected, then he would have been on Perriman.
They're saying that the loss was unequal.
Yeah, no.
That they lost more than we did. And then this idea that that you're pulling out of thin air that, oh, if you had Marshawn, they wouldn't have scored that touchdown. Yeah. You don't know that. Not to mention, then we would have kicked a field goal, and we still would have won the game.
Sure.
We would have just won it 16-10, right?
Correct. Now, they didn't say had there not been two picks, they would have won the game?
Three.
Oh, okay.
Had there not been three.
Who's counting?
Yeah.
All right.
If the Buccaneers had only brought 11 players to the game, we probably would have won. Yeah. So that wasn't fair.
Can't get into that.
Oh, I meant to
If they've scored more points than we did, they would have won.
Just a little note for to back up what I was saying about Chris Olave in fantasy earlier.
Uh-huh.
He was targeted on passes that traveled 365 yards in the air.
Wow.
That is an enormous number.
Jeez.
So it was like 50-yard bombs constantly. 365 air yards.
Yeah.
I think he ended up with
It doesn't do any good if it's not completed, I'm just kind of throwing that out
You
there.
Are correct.
All right, thank you.
There's a little bit. We've been going for a while now.
You're around 46 minutes.
But there was some stuff elsewhere around the league that I found very interesting. You want to talk about
it? Sure, go ahead.
Well, obviously, the big story was that there were two just gigantic comebacks. Miami, something like 28 points in the fourth quarter.
Six touchdowns in that game.
By Tua.
Tua. Mm-hmm. Good for him.
Two each to Waddle and Tyreek Hill. So an amazing comeback. And then Arizona made their amazing comeback.
Yeah, against the Raiders.
The Raiders, and then won it in overtime. I didn't make up any of these notes. I just came across them. But the last 711 games in which a team had a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter and they won. This was the first time in 712 games that happened.
Unreal.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy.
And listen, what would you expect happened there? Baltimore imploded and committed a bunch of turnovers.
Sure.
No turnovers in the game.
Yep.
Maybe Miami got the help of a
they did the
special teams return.
It was called the FU play. Literally, it was. I won't say the word, but that's what it's called. Because they were it's just a play that it doesn't, F it. We're just
get out there and run.
Yep, get it done.
Happens sometimes in when you're playing street ball.
Yeah,
right? You come in the huddle and go, just
make a play.
Just get
make
open.
A play. Go ahead.
It was Baltimore that actually had a special teams touchdown.
Yeah.
Miami didn't have that. They didn't have any takeaways. They did have Baltimore had three scoring plays of 75 or more yards. I don't understand how Miami won this game.
Yeah. Well, how about the Jets?
Their
comeback.
That's
huge.
They beat Cleveland?
Yeah. Yep. How about that? New York City is all excited. The Giants are 2-0. Jets are.
They have a win.
They have a win.
They have one win.
Hey, listen, when you're a Jets fan, you're going to take it.
I think I heard that on Sunday was the first time, and I don't remember when, but it was the first time in a very long time that the Yankees, Jets, and Giants had all won on the same day. And I don't think the Yankees have been the problem there.
And only six undefeated teams left.
Yeah, and we're the only one with two road wins already.
Sure. You name the six, right? You can name them.
I can name them?
Yeah, I can name them.
Buffalo?
Correct.
I'd have to probably go through the divisions. Miami? Okay, I got Buffalo and Miami.
Yep.
Kansas City?
Correct. That's your three there. Yep, there's three.
That's my three?
That's three.
Those keep are the going. Three that I get?
No, you can keep going.
San Fran lost their first week.
Yep. They're out. That's not them. It's unexpected.
Seattle lost this week.
It's unexpected teams.
It's not Jacksonville.
No.
It's not.
Go to the NFC.
Okay. Oh, Philly.
Philly, yep. Unexpected.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I know some people who thought they might be pretty good.
Yep, yep.
No, not Minnesota. They lost last night.
No, think about it. We were just talking about the city.
Huh?
We were just talking.
Oh, the Giants.
The Giants.
There's one more to go, right?
Yep. Scott. One more to go.
Oh, I already said the Bucks, right?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. The Bucks.
Yay!
So I got there.
The look on your face.
I thought I'd already said
going,
the Bucks.
No, yeah. You did. You hit all. That's why when I said when you hit three, you did the AFC teams.
Oh,
and I was like, okay, now go to the NFC. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, that Arizona game.
Yeah.
Did you see any of the highlights?
Of the Arizona game?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I got home.
What I think is hilarious is that if there was a very important two-point conversion that mm-hmm. Kyler Murray scored
yep.
on. And if you read the play-by-play,
uh-huh.
the entire thing says, K. Murray rushes left end, attempt succeeds. What actually happened is that, according to NFL Next Gen stats, yeah. he ran 85 yards on that play.
I was just going to say, you can't – the guy that's writing that goal just – he ran touchdown.
I think it's probably you're pushing certain little things.
Yeah.
You're pushing buttons.
But,
I mean, that is technically accurate.
Yeah. I'll tell you what was nice. I know we're running long here, but what I thought was nice – was actually having a 1 o'clock Eastern time
that was,
game.
Yeah.
And being on
we
the
got home at like 7:30.
Yeah. And being on the road, it's a little harder when you're on the road on Central Time because like I went to the stadium. I left for the stadium at 7 o'clock in the morning. Even though I was telling myself it's really 8 o'clock in the morning, but boy, it was hard because I got up at 5:30 that time, which is really 6:30 here, and I was just like, okay, lie to yourself. Tell you this is great. But it was weird. Walking out of a stadium, and the sun was out.
Yeah.
You know? And
it was fun.
It was.
It was
you know,
a good feeling.
And getting home, and actually it was still, you know, dusk by the time we landed.
You got to watch the night game if you wanted to.
And I got to watch the night game.
It wasn't very good.
No, but still, it was like, wow, I'm home. This is nice. Yeah, it was good.
It worked out perfect.
But I will say this, though. If I got to pick it, as much as I love 1 o'clock games, I'll take the prime times because that means we're good.
Yeah.
So.
Prime time Mondays on the road are not great though, but we don't have one of those.
No, I think probably when made it extra special was the Dallas game was a night game on Sunday night, and last Monday, I didn't really feel great until like probably Wednesday, just because you know you're running on 4 hours sleep, whatever. But I think that like it's pretty nice. We got a 4:25 game against
Packers.
The Packers, then we have a night game at home, so that's not so bad.
Right.
And then we have two road trips that are 1 o'clock games, so that's pretty sweet.
Well, this last one worked out perfectly for me because we landed around 7:30,
uh-huh.
and then I just did the short little drive over to the main airport.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
Giselle was flying in from Atlanta.
There you go.
So I waited like 10 minutes, and there she was.
And it doesn't get any better than that, right?
Right.
All right.
One more thing.
Okay.
We're recording this on Tuesday.
Here we are.
It has not become official yet,
but it will.
But by the time you're hearing it, this should have happened. The Buccaneers are signing wide receiver Cole Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting signing.
I think so, yes.
Now, again, also because we don't have all the information yet, the report is that he's going to be signed to the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really mean much because, A, you can be elevated.
Right.
And, B, you could later just be signed, especially if the Evans suspension holds, then you have a roster spot open if you want to.
And the good news too is that if he's on the practice squad, you don't have to release anybody off your 53.
You wouldn't have to, is my point.
Right.
Because no, I'm saying Mike Evans being suspended opens the spot.
Right.
So
but I mean even
afterwards. But you have to release somebody from the practice squad. So that's not going to be good news for somebody. We don't know that name yet.
No.
Cole Beasley, you might be surprised to know.
Yep.
Had 82 catches each of the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's fair to say he's still got something left in the tank. He is, I think why the Bucs would want him, why Tom Brady would want him, is I think he could help us get some of the easy throws that we're missing.
Yeah.
Especially with Chris Godwin
down.
We're not getting a lot of the easy throws.
Mm-hmm.
Beasley works almost exclusively out of the slot.
Right.
Knows what he's doing there.
Mm-hmm.
Can probably pick up an offense pretty quickly, especially if it's just some simple things in the slot, right? And he might give Tom Brady some of those layups that have been hard to come by with the receiving.
Interesting enough, though, he's a little guy.
Well, he's kind of little. I mean, he's probably – remember how Adam Humphries was little, but then he also got kind of jacked up?
He played big.
I would suspect that's the same thing with Cole Beasley.
I don't think he's 5'9", 5'10".
So?
Well, it's a little guy. for a receiver, considering, you know, Mike Evans.
I don't know this, but I'd be willing to bet he's pretty solid, though.
Oh, yeah. Aren't they all?
So, yeah. I don't think that's that big of an issue.
Okay.
That's all I got, Jeff.
All right. That's good.
So, should we get Brandon Walton in here?
Yeah, let's do that because we're running long, but that's okay,
too.
Yeah,
we got to get to a bunch of fan questions,
okay,
too.
We'll be back.
The Salty Dogs.
And we're back here on the Salty Dogs podcast. I am Scott Smith.
And I'm still Jeff Ryan.
And we're the Salty Dogs. But now we have with us our special guest of the week, tackle Brandon Walton.
Yeah.
Brandon, thank you for your time here. I know it's a busy day.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So let's just start with the most exciting part. This past weekend, you got in the game at left tackle, one of the most important and difficult positions on the field. Donovan Smith was out. Josh Wells started but got hurt. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this was your first regular season action on offense in your career, right?
Yes, it was.
So just tell us what that experience was like.
It was just crazy how it happened. But, you know, coaches looked at me and said, you're next up. And I just went out there and I did what I had to do. You know what I'm saying? I had good coaches with me and my teammates helped me a lot, so it just turned out great.
You knew that coming into the game that if anything happened at left tackle, you were next in?
Yeah.
I figured you had every plan. So, wait. Coach has been asked about you a couple times, Coach Bowles, since then, obviously, and has said very nice things, but I think both times he started with the fact that you just went in there and fought, that you weren't going to get pushed around and you fought. When you're in that position like that, when you're thrust in and you haven't had a lot of experience yet, but I'm sure you're confident in your talents, is it start with that, just being tough?
Yeah, so it's just you go in there and put everything out in the film and do what I can for my teammates to win the game, and that's how I'm continuing to play moving forward.
How difficult was it to just start in the Superdome?
Yeah.
And as loud as that was, I mean, it's hard enough that you're being thrown into it.
Yeah.
But then the noise, because it was loud.
Yeah.
So how did you deal with that?
So we prepared for that during the week, and when I went in, I had to go into a type of zone with my teammates and just focus on what I had to do each play. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of minimize everything outside of the huddle.
Do you watch the ball? I mean, how do you know when to, when it's that loud, how do you know when to move?
We watch the ball, and then we have other cues from our guards and stuff, so my teammates help me out.
At any point after the game was over with, did you just kind of go, holy cow, I just played in an NFL game immediately?
Yeah, so actually before the game was over, it was 3 seconds left. Offense went out onto the field, and I kind of sat there on the bench.
Oh.
And then I realized, I was like, oh, we still got to do a victory formation. And so everybody was calling for me, and I was sitting there on the bench. I'm like, wow, I just really played my first NFL game.
Yeah.
So it hit me before that even happened. But ever since then, I realized that's my job now.
That's the best play for an offense that there is.
I was just going to say.
Victory kneel down.
You almost missed the best play.
Exactly.
Now, we'll get back into your past a little bit here in a minute, but you played tackle in college, right?
Yep.
And when the Bucs signed you last year midway through camp when there was a lot of injuries, you were still playing tackle at that point, right?
Yeah.
So when did this switch? Because in this year in training camp, we saw you playing a lot of guard and even competing for the starting spot at left guard. So when did that switch, or maybe not switch, but you adding that to your repertoire happen?
I came into the league as a tackle, but I got trained as a guard, Buffalo and at Pittsburgh.
Oh,
so,
okay. I didn't know that.
So when I got claimed off waivers, I actually only played left guard last year. And I started playing tackle again during scout team just to give the guys a look. And I had experience from there from college. And so coming into the training camp, I wanted to establish myself as a person that can play guard and tackle moving forward.
It's a smart move, obviously.
Yeah. In a preseason game, did you not play three different positions on the line?
I did. I played at left tackle, right guard, right tackle. I think some left guard, too.
Okay.
In the same game?
Yes. Mindset. What do you have to switch up to go from the left side to the right side? I mean – You're just lining up and going?
Yeah, so what I had to do was learn it from a center's perspective so I can flip each side. And
you played center before? Or you were practicing?
I practice center. But I learned it from a center's perspective. So when I do flip certain sides, I don't have to change anything in my mind, if that makes sense from a play standpoint.
Okay.
Wow.
So when you're learning left guard, you're in your mind, you're learning it from a center's perspective.
Yes. So I know the whole play.
Never heard that before.
No.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Can you play center?
Yeah, I can.
The more you can do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, wow.
So you are a local guy, right?
Yeah.
You played at Seminole High?
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in Largo.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. So were you a Bucs fan growing up?
I was.
He was 4 years old.
Oh, he must have done some reading up.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you let him tell us this,
Jeff? Go ahead. I just want you to know, Scott, that I know things.
Yeah, but I told someone that when they first won the Super Bowl, I remember going outside and my whole neighborhood was going crazy. And I'm like, wow, that's something I want to do one day.
Yeah.
And then it's just crazy. Now I'm here doing that. So
we were there.
Yeah. It was, yeah, we were.
It was pretty cool.
It is very, very cool.
Yeah.
You know, now, I mean, you grew up in the Bay Area, grew up in Largo. It's almost surreal that you're playing for the home team.
Yeah.
So your family's here.
Yep.
And so they're coming to the game on Sunday?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. How many?
I don't even know yet. I got a number, and then I just got a couple more tickets just to make sure.
You'll figure it out when you get your paycheck.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when you find out that you owe the team something.
Yeah.
So it seemed like you were a pretty good recruit coming out of high school, right? Three-star, yeah, something like that, and you had a number of offers.
Yeah.
What made you choose Florida Atlantic?
Wow. So I chose Florida Atlantic because they were a big epicenter of business opportunities, as well as they played two Power Five teams every year.
Oh.
So I got both the business connections and playing in South Florida, but also I have the opportunity to make it to the NFL.
Yeah.
And I got both of those things coming out. Like, I still have connections in Boca, and I'm here now.
Nice.
So it worked out for me.
I mean, you don't have to get too specific, but what sort of business are you hoping to be in?
Oh, I was just like, people, what my friends invest in, and being friends with people with businesses like mine, so I can be in tune with that with my money after football.
Yeah, I'm sure you want to play football for as long as possible, I would guess. But afterwards, do you have ideas in your head of what you might want to do?
I have a lot of ideas, but I just haven't pinpointed a couple yet.
Okay.
But I have like a little drawing board, everything I want to do, so.
I try personally not to ask the Tom Brady question because every one of your players gets asked the same question.
But you kind of have to. You kind of have to ask it.
Yeah, the fact that your first real regular season action was protecting Tom Brady's blindside sort of ratchets up kind of the, I'm not gonna say tension of the situation, but it made it kind of serious, didn't it?
Did it ratchet up the tension?
Going into the situation, I kind of had a mindset of simplifying the whole situation to myself so I didn't feel the tension as I was inside the game. So, like, the fact that we were in a Superdome, the fact that it was Tom Brady, the fact that it was my first start, I just went out there, I'm just going to do what I do each play and do what I can to help the team and then let everything else hit me afterwards. But, like, while I'm in it, I kind of just focus it on one thing.
Wow, that's not easy to do.
Yeah, it's probably...
I mean, to take the emotion out of it in the moment.
Well, and that was a particularly emotional game as well.
Right.
You probably already knew, but if you didn't, you do now, that it's not a real friendly rivalry between the Buccaneers and the Saints.
Yeah, I could see that.
Was that pretty obvious right from the beginning, or not until it kind of spilled over there?
I got some of it last year, and I just realized what it was. And going into the game, I realized how much it meant to the people around here, so I wanted to do my part.
Now, that win was a big win.
Yeah, it was.
How much fun was it, though, for you?
I mean, great.
a couple days now removed. Now you set a bar where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So what are you working on this week?
Just getting better, being a better player, and still being that piece that they can trust in, put me in the game. If it's at left tackle or another position, I just want to be there to help the team win.
And how do you feel after your first game?
I feel great.
Physically?
Yeah, physically.
I feel great. I feel like I can play in this league, and I know I can contribute, so I'm good.
What do you know of the Packers so far? I mean, they do have a couple pretty good edge guys, right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they have some really powerful big edge guys, so we're doing what we can to prepare for them.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, though, is, and you brought it up, during training camp, we noticed Brandon being put in position to play a little
left
bit
guard.
More. Yeah, and this is in the very beginning of training camp. Is that when you had an inkling that things were going to be going headed in the right direction for your career during camp?
I'll actually say OTAs.
I felt
the plays we ran in OTAs, and I felt confident moving in and having a kind of a blueprint of what I need to work on in that month off. So I came into training camp like, okay, I'm going to attack each day, one play at a time, doing what I can to be the best football player I can be, and see how far we go.
Did that come from getting to be on the practice squad the entire season last year?
Yeah, it's me on the practice squads. I just learned a lot.
Yeah.
And just going against our defense every day, you cannot get better.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have two step-siblings and two half-brothers.
Mm-hmm. And you have a daughter?
I do.
Okay, and how old is your daughter?
She's 4.
Oh.
Yeah.
So she's now actually comprehending that what you can do.
Dad plays football.
Yeah.
I was just talking to one of my friends, actually, that she's going to grow up knowing that I play football, and she's not going to realize it until she's a little bit older. She's like, oh, your dad doesn't play football?
She's going to think everybody's dad does?
Yeah, like, my dad plays football, your dad.
What's her name?
Julia.
And you're really close to your mom, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So mom's going to be at the game.
Yep.
Cheering the loudest.
Yep.
Okay.
Like she always is.
See, that's the best. I think that's absolutely the best, that when you're able to share it with your family. And then here in your hometown, I'm sure you're hearing from a lot of people you didn't even know you were friends with right now.
Yeah.
All right, Brandon. Well, we thank you for your time.
Yes.
Like I said, we know these are busy
days. And he's really squeezing it in for us because this has been a crazy Wednesday.
Yep. So. Well, thank you.
All right. Good guys. Talk. Hey, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
The Salty Dogs.
And we're back here one more time on the Salty Dogs podcast. This is your part of the show.
Yeah, it's the fun part.
We're going to take your questions. And like I said at the top, they've been coming in, man. We're getting a lot of them.
Well, good.
So I'm happy about that.
Without further ado, go to them.
Didn't you think Brandon Walton was nice?
I thought.
We didn't purposely do two offensive linemen in a row.
No, but, you know, I kind of like the fact that we're talking to guys that most people don't know.
Right.
You know, yet.
Right.
And they're always very happy.
Yeah, who wants Tom Brady on the show?
Yeah, I mean, and they're all very happy to do it.
They have been, which is
nice. Yeah, which is nice.
Okay. Here's the first one from Sam in Asheville. And this
Asheville
one,
or Nashville?
Nashville.
Nashville. Okay.
This one, unlike the rest, this one actually arrived a week ago when we were doing this. So he's going to be referring to the first game.
Okay.
But when I got back up to my desk, there it was. I'm like, well, that's going to have to wait till next week.
Sure.
What a great way to start the season. I'm confident we will get the red zone offense figured out, so am I. Mm-hmm. But I was happy to see how well the O-line did, since that was the unit I was most concerned about. Again, he's talking about the Dallas
game. Sure.
This question has nothing to do with football, but I enjoyed y'all's harmony of the Bucks fight song last week. BUCCANEERS. Go Bucks. I think I also sang a Bonnie Raitt song at one point.
You did.
No singing this week. That's a plus for everybody.
Yeah, there we go. We haven't yet. It's still early.
And you're not going to get me to rap. Not even the Chronic.
We'll wait and see.
Which got me curious. Who is the favorite band / group for each of you? And if you had to start your own band, I think he means together, what instruments would you guys play and who would be the lead singer? Anyway, thanks for the great work, and let's crush the Saints.
All right.
In the fourth quarter.
Well, I'm old school, so.
So give us a couple guys, a couple things.
A band?
Bands.
My favorite band was The Doors.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I got into The Doors for a while in the 80s.
So. Yeah, very much so. I mean, if you have to go to just one,
right.
It would be The
it's
Doors.
It's hard to go to just one, man.
Yeah, that's what, for me, it is, because, you know.
My favorite recording artist of all time is Prince.
Okay, I could go with that.
And I even got to go to the Purple Rain concert when I was like,
oh, wow.
16 years old.
See, you don't ever forget that, right?
Well, I mean, he's just incredible.
Sure.
I can't say that I listen to a lot of Prince anymore, unless I happen to be listening to an 80s station.
Right.
But throughout my life, that's probably the main go-to. Mm-hmm. More recently, I really like the Raconteurs, but you probably don't know who that is. It involves White. I can't think of his first name, but from the guy from the White Stripes, Jack White.
Oh, okay.
It's another band of
sure.
his. That one's really good. I was into U2 for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Still classics.
Joshua Tree.
Joshua Tree is the best album.
Yeah. When it came
out. Hot Tongue Baby's pretty good, but I think Joshua Tree is the best.
My best moment seeing U2 was after 9/11, the Super Bowl after 9/11. It was in New Orleans, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And U2 was the halftime entertainment, and they scrolled all the names of the survivors of who lost their lives.
Yeah,
in the World Trade Centers, but it was a very emotional, and that's a concert that I always.
I saw him here.
I mean, Bruce Springsteen. I mean, you know, I mean, I can see.
No, thank you.
Okay, yeah. See,
not a Springsteen head.
Really?
No, not interested.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi.
No, I mean they're fine. There's not anything I've ever
AC/DC.
Whatever. Wow. Back in Black's a good song.
Wow.
I don't think I have a lot of favorite
Black
bands.
Sabbath?
No, I'm not a Black Sabbath guy. I was never much into heavy metal.
You notice I'm kind of throwing out headbanger music.
Yeah.
Okay,
I liked Prince in my formative years in the 80s. I liked Prince, and I liked a lot of alternative stuff. That's
Red
not,
Corvette as one of my favorites.
That's not, yeah. That's off the 19, that's off the, nine, was it called 1999?
Something like that. Okay. So what was his other question? That
oh, yeah, if we were a band, what interest? Okay, for me, first of all, I have no musical talent at all, other than my angelic singing voice.
So I'm
taking this as a fantasy in which I would be able to play.
Uh-huh.
Well, it would be freaking cool to be able to shred on a guitar, so I would want to be a guitarist. Mm-hmm.
I played the drums.
Okay, so you'd be the drummer. Yeah. I probably would do some of the singing, I think.
Yeah.
Because I do like to sing quite a bit.
Sure, you do. You break into song down the hallway sometimes.
I do that quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I was singing. Well, I said I wasn't going to sing, so I won't sing.
No.
Okay, so that's right. That one. Thank you for the interest, Sam. Yeah. Appreciate it. Next one. With the injury to Donovan Smith, any chance Tristan Wirfs slides to the left side? Godspeed, Rich. That one obviously came before the game.
Sure.
Here's what I'd say to that. Brandon Walton was playing in that game.
Right.
If the Bucks were going to do this, I think they would have done that before going to Brandon Walton, who did a great job but had never played before.
Right. I think the problem when you start switching people, now you got two positions that people aren't used to doing. And not that he could, not
who
that
knows?
Tristan couldn't do it, but why are you going to take another position and put a
Tristan
two unknowns?
Tristan is obviously, he was a first team All-Pro, and I think the other guy, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was Whitworth or somebody, was a left tackle. So he was basically considered the best right tackle in the game last year, and he's still that good.
Uh-huh.
And if you move him to right, left tackle, now, knowing how good Tristan is, maybe he'd immediately excel at it. But there's a chance he's not quite as good on that side,
but things are different. So
make a few mistakes because
your hand,
can't mirror
your hand
as well.
Placement's different. Everything changes.
So, and in this particular game, it wouldn't have made any sense because their most dangerous pass rusher is Cameron Jordan, and he rushes exclusively from the other side over the right tackle.
Right.
So we had our best guy on their best guy. I think if you're ever going to do a Tristan Wirfs to left tackle thing, it's going to be a between seasons thing.
Mm-hmm.
If at some point Donovan Smith's tenure here comes to an end,
sure.
I think he's got at least one more year left on his contract, but I'm not sure. If that happens at some point, then maybe you consider Tristan Wirfs.
Right.
And then you take your time over the offseason. So I don't think they're going to do it in the season.
No, I don't see it either.
And nowadays there's so many good pass rushers, you kind of need to have a great player on both sides. Just leave your great right tackle at right tackle. I think that's the philosophy.
Yeah.
Okay, next one from Todd. Okay, here's a question that needs an answer, and he wrote that.
Needs?
K-N-E-E-D-S.
Oh.
See what I did there, Scott? It's about the case of the disappearing knee pads. Mm. I've noticed over the past couple of years that knee pads have all but become extinct. Linemen now sport knee braces. I get it. No knee pads translates to greater mobility. But, man, it strikes me to be a gamble. That kneecap isn't the Rock of Gibraltar. Is there any science behind non-protected knees being a worthy risk from an injury standpoint? Mm. Love your show. It's my first go-to once published, and hashtag screw the Saints.
Appreciate the close.
So, Jeff.
Usually it's not the kneecap that goes bad. It's usually the sides.
But I can understand his point. Can you just thinking about like a helmet hitting my kneecap is chilling.
Well, they have to wear – they're required to wear certain pads.
Okay. So
am I correct? Yeah.
Let me ask you what you think the answer to this question is of him saying why the disappearing knee pads?
Because they found out that knee braces are better for
him. No, the answer is he's wrong.
Oh.
Knee pads are required as are
they
thigh
are.
Pads. I went down and asked.
Okay, so in other words, they're not as bulky.
It's obviously not clear that right. I mean, if you're watching the game, you think they're not wearing knee pads.
Would you go down and see Brad?
Yeah, Mike.
Or Mike.
Mike
okay.
Byrick.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do any of our guys still wear knee pads? Because I kind of took this question
to
face
value. Did he cock
value.
His head and look at you?
He goes,
go,
yeah, they all do.
Do.
He said they're required to. They're required to wear knee pads and thigh pads. I guess it's just not as obvious anymore.
No, because it's more sewn into the uniform
than
it is, than, you know, like you would put it on and then put your pants over it. It's more in already sewn
okay.
in there.
So, Todd, take a closer look because they are wearing knee pads.
Very good. Well, I didn't notice that either. I know there are requirements for certain pads. I didn't know.
Yeah, knee and thigh are required.
Okay.
Hey, Scott and Jeff.
Hey.
Right after the Super Bowl win.
Win.
Super Bowl win, I had written in and told you that I'd found out we were going to have a baby.
Oh.
And that I'd have to fight Mom to make the baby not a Seahawk fan.
Oh.
Well, the surprise follow-up is that we had twins, so now we each could influence one. They just turned one. Well, this gets better. They just turned one the day before the season opener, and the Cowboys game was the first real time they paid attention.
Oh.
Every time the Bucks got a tackle, my daughter would point and laugh. So I think she's going to be a fan. My son was just excited to see everyone running.
Yeah. That's the difference between a girl and a guy.
No real question. Yeah, like that was enough to excite the boy.
Yeah,
right?
Just I see
everybody's running around. Yeah. Awesome. The girl's being more analytical about it. No real question this time, but wanted to share a follow-up. Here's a fun picture of the family watching a game last year. Oh. Stay salty, Phil from Spokane, Washington. Now, I did not bring the picture down.
Okay.
But I will describe it to you because it indeed was very cute.
Okay.
And it's from the perspective of behind the two babies who are sitting with their mom, who is wearing a bright green Seahawks jersey, and they're facing the TV, and they're right next to each other. And one has on the left has a red jersey that I assume to be a Bucks, and the one on the left has a green one that I assume to be a Seahawks. And on their backs, it says R2 on one and D2 on the other.
Oh,
so that's very cute. And they're watching, and they're watching
the game.
They're watching the TV. Also, I could see in the corner a credit to Phil and perhaps his wife, maybe both of them, maybe her. They had a very nicely decorated Christmas tree.
Oh,
it was beautiful.
Look at you looking in the background. Yes. See, whenever you take a picture,
it's
you got
to the side.
You got to make sure. You got to look at everything.
Assuming that the names on the back are their names, they're Finnegan and Quinn.
Oh, okay. So, I like those names.
Yeah, probably Finnegan will end up being called Finn.
Uh-huh.
So Finn and Quinn.
Quinn.
That's good names for twins.
Cute.
It even rhymes with twins.
Yeah, look at you. You're a poet. You didn't know it.
I did know it. I kind of did that on purpose. Okay.
Wrap it for me.
Well, thanks a lot, Phil. That was a very cute picture. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
All right.
Hey, yo, salty dudes.
Hey.
I noticed in the past that when we have injured players, they are not always on the sidelines. Is that by choice or determined by the team? Parentheses, example, season-ending injured players.
Yeah.
Mike's suspension just came through, and my other question is, when a player is suspended for a week, can they not get team treatment for any injuries? Do they have to go to an offside center or just wait? Thanks for making an hour plus of one work day very smooth with the pod. As always, Makai Pallara.
I like how he said an hour plus. I like that.
So, two questions here then.
Yeah.
The first one is, can injured players be on the sideline? They can.
Mm-hmm.
I also got a question in my written mailbag. Can practice squad players come on trips? And they can.
They
and
do.
Sometimes they usually do, right?
They usually do, yeah.
And then they especially do if they think there's a chance they might get elevated.
And the reason why a lot of coaches like to take the practice squad players is because if you get elevated and it's a road trip, they don't want them to go, okay, how do I get to the bus? Where do I need to go? What room?
So they already know the
They know the routine. And there is actually a routine of how you arrive. It's a process, and if you don't know, you do feel like a fish out of water.
Yeah, a little bit. So injured players can come and be on the sideline, and I think it's more just choice by the team whether or not to do it. Whether or not they come on the trips is probably determined by will going on the trip make it harder for them to do treatment or cause them discomfort, right? Like if your back was really messed up, you probably wouldn't want a three-hour plane flight, right?
No.
Okay, so, yeah, you can, and the decision is based mostly on is it a good idea, right?
Right.
And then as for players who are suspended, the rules evolved a little bit in recent years. They definitely can come in
for treatment
and get treatment. They could probably eat meals too.
Right.
But they cannot. It's expressly said in the letter to them that they cannot practice with the team or engage in football activities.
Right.
Which and is football activities include meetings.
And conversation. Yeah, all of that. Yeah.
So they can be in the building because really – you don't want to deprive players of treatment.
No.
And you don't want to make them go somewhere else.
No, because you don't know what they're doing.
They have a plan for players.
Correct.
Here. So that all makes very much sense.
Yep.
But that's a good question.
Yep.
Okay, moving on.
All right. You're doing good.
Hey, guys. I know we're not supposed to condone. This is Mike in Connecticut.
All right.
I know we're not supposed to condone fighting, but I love having Mike Evans on the Bucks. He's not taking any crap from anyone, especially that fraud who wears 23 for the Saints. Let's be clear that how you feel about Marshawn
Lattimore.
Yeah, He's a good player.
There, no question.
I won't give him the respect of saying his name. I will always back a player who stands up for his teammates. 23 gets away with murder and never shuts up.
Yeah.
That being said, I am surprised there was a suspension given that Aaron Donald can swing helmets like clubs and nothing happens. I'm also surprised only Mike got one when 23 is just as guilty by throwing a punch at Lenny.
Yeah.
I think it was a shove.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a punch.
No.
And the thing about Aaron Donald is it happened in a practice.
Yeah.
So it's not subject to league rules.
Correct.
It's subject to team discipline.
Mm-hmm. And they had a...
And he
got a stern warning.
When Myles Garrett swung his helmet at Mason Rudolph, he did get a multi-game suspension. Yeah. So that would have happened.
Sure.
As for my question, it seems even more appropriate now. Last week, a listener asked the over-under for games lost due to Ryan Jensen not being on the field.
Yeah.
My question is, what's your over-under for fights now that Jensen is out? He was always good for a few per season, and I love him for it, so long they didn't come at the wrong time. I'll put the over-under at 2, and since Mike already had one, I'm taking the over. By the way, since Tommy started it on Sunday, I hope he's paying Mike's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tom really started
it. I don't think he did either.
I think it's a little nebulous.
Right.
I hope you guys have a good week. Thanks, Mike. Go Bucks. Hope you have a good week as well.
I'll take the
over because there's 15 more games.
I'm going to take the under because I don't think there's going to be any more
fights.
You
don't think there's going to be a single fight?
No, I think after after an eviction, you can't.
The coaches get a little more intent upon.
It's like, what are you doing here?
Okay, you took the under. I took the over.
Okay.
I just think it's in human nature that at some point the tensions are going to boil
and
over.
And when we talk about a fight, okay, let's...
Plus, Ryan Jensen could be back this year.
Yeah, what define a fight?
Well, right. So just a little shoving doesn't count?
No, because that's not a fight. When it's multiple and then okay, more so people come in, yes.
A melee.
Yeah. I mean, just a shove, that's just, you know.
The other team could start it, by the way.
Correct.
So right. Sometimes you just don't back down as a
competitive
player. Well, no,
our team does not back down.
So that's why I'm taking the over.
Okay.
All right. One more.
Okay. I'm ready.
Of course.
Sure.
Our friend in Brazil.
Oh,
Alexander.
Nice. Hey, Alexander.
Ahoy, salty ones. Hope this finds you both well and relieved. The curse is over. Which yeah. By means
yeah,
the
I got
Saints,
it.
Obviously.
Got
right?
it.
Let me make sure that I did get to all these questions. Yeah. Got to that one.
Yeah.
Got to that one.
The curse. I get it. Okay. The Saints, you know,
can you
voodoo dolls.
Can you guys please explain?
Which is a good group,
that's
by the way,
point,
too.
Right?
Yeah.
The voodoo dolls?
Yeah.
There's a group called the Voodoo Dolls?
I think so, yes.
There's a group called the Goo Goo Dolls.
Well, maybe it's the Goo Goo Dolls then.
I think there is a voodoo, a band with the word voodoo in it. I can't think of it right.
There's
now.
Also Marie Laveau.
Were you a Blue Oyster Cult guy?
Yeah.
Pulled that one out of thin
air. Wow, you did.
They're the ones with the cowbell song, right? Don't they have the cowbell song?
Yeah. There were a lot of cowbells in the late 60s, early 70s.
That's what made it great.
Yeah. You know,
all the cowbells.
Your whole job, you know, if you couldn't play an instrument or anything, they gave you a cowbell.
The cowbell.
And you just clink, clink,
You've
clink.
Seen the famous Will Ferrell
yes.
Sandra
yes.
Lyskin,
we
right?
need more
He
cowbells.
Was very enthusiastic about the
Very
cowbell.
Much so.
Need more cowbell.
All right.
Can you guys explain to me how the NFL suspended only Mike, and he spells it the way Mike's a little lower uh-huh. with the M1K3, for Sunday's melee without getting in trouble? I think I already did that.
Yeah, we did.
I think it's because he launched himself at a guy that couldn't reasonably expect to know he was going to mm-hmm. be hit. Either in or
it could be
after
a
play.
It could be a movie called The Blind Side.
But he has another question. If not, how can we incorporate a totally new receiver in Cole Beasley with just three practices to make him a factor on our first home game? Since you did, thanks for reading. Alexander Nascimento from Sao Paulo.
That's actually pretty easy. He's a football player, so you just give him a couple of number of plays to study and know, and then he's not going to learn the whole playbook. He's just going to learn what he needs to do for the number of plays he's going to go.
And part of the answer, too, is there's no guarantee he is playing this week.
Correct.
This doesn't – it might be, but it isn't necessarily a signing for this Sunday. It might be. I don't know. But
and they might – you know, they're bringing him in. They liked what they see, and they want to see more. But, you know, I mean, they sign him. He's on the practice squad, but they want to see more, you know, how much, what kind of shape he's in. I'm sure he's in good shape.
I mean, we could get a positive trend in receiver health. Uh-huh. Mike probably will remain suspended, although it's not sure.
Sure.
But if you get a couple guys back, then maybe you don't necessarily need to press him into action right away, but you got him down there for depth if the injuries occur again.
Right.
And so he was on the street, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he could take we have 16 practice squad spots. It's probably not that hard to work around there.
No.
But it was what I said before. I shouldn't have brought it up because I should have saved it for here, but I just think he gives you an opportunity for some of the easy layups that this offense has been lacking. We've had a handful of downfield plays. Scotty had one. Mike had one.
Right.
We had Julio Jones in the first game. I think Mike had another 20-something yarder. We've had a few of those. We don't have Rob Gronkowski to give you the occasional seam splitting big play. I think we need more short and intermediate stuff, and that's the kind of stuff that he can provide you. He has something like 550 career catches, but a career average of, I don't know, 10, 11 yards per carry, which is relatively low. It's more like a Jarvis Landry type of profile. So if you've seen what Jarvis Landry has done for the first two games in New Orleans, which has been pretty productive, this is what Cole Beasley could give the Bucs, and I agree with you. He doesn't have to learn the whole playbook right away. Give him a limited amount of stuff, use him for 15 or 20 snaps, get some easy layups, help move the chains.
And the other thing, too, is you can go to the same play more than one time. So,
right.
Yeah. You know,
well, and a lot of plays have options on them, especially when you work in the slot.
Yeah. Okay.
So you see what the coverage is, and you and the quarterback figure out that he's going to go this way or he's going to go that way.
Well, and now we're getting ready for another fun, frolicking game, the Green Bay Packers. Those are always entertaining games. Normally.
They've been good for us lately.
Yeah, they have been very good for us, so that'll be fun.
The last two times that Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have met in a regular season game, the winner of that game has gone on to win the Super Bowl.
Really?
2018 with the Patriots
uh-huh.
and 2020 with the Buccaneers.
Ooh, that's a good little
nugget.
That
one?
How'd you find that one?
The NFL sent out some notes today.
Nice.
That was one of them. You just got to read.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good note. I like that.
Let's keep that straight.
That will be in our broadcast somewhere on
Oh,
Sunday.
Okay. All right, I'll try to remind you.
Well, either that or you can use it when you're on your segment.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
We're done?
I am finished. I am exhausted. I've exhausted all my topics.
We did good. All right. Since you did, thanks for listening.